This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Michigan Opera Theater announced a major coup last week. The company's new artistic director is going to be Yuval Sharon, a recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant who's won rave reviews for staging thought-provoking performances around the world. His first official act in Detroit will tell you a lot about the kind of director he is. It's a condensed staging of Wagner's Twilight of the Gods, featuring soprano Christine Gerke. It's a sign of Yuval Sharon's reputation that he can draw a singer of Gerke's caliber, but the staging of this production will be unlike anything Detroit audiences have seen. It's a drive-in performance, set at a Detroit Opera House parking structure with a full performance simulcast via car radio. Are you getting a sense of Yuval Sharon's creative imagination? He joins us now for a longer conversation. Yuval Sharon, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
I know you grew up in Chicago. Will you tell me a little bit about the first opera that you ever experienced in person?
Yes, actually. Well, my first opera was not at Lyric Opera of Chicago, although I did see a lot of my early operas there. My first opera was actually in an opera company in Germany when my dad was working at an engineering firm there. I went to visit him and we went to the opera because, you know, that's what you do when you're in Germany. You know, every German town has its own little opera company. They were doing La Traviata. And this was in the time before super titles.
So you were hearing it in the original Italian.
Yes,
all the way.
Exactly. It was in the original Italian. It was a, you know, conventional production, but I did not know it at all what was going on. And you know, the music was really interesting at times, but I felt a little bit like I was observing some sort of alien culture. I didn't really know what was going on stage or what was happening, and so I actually felt quite alienated from opera as a first experience.
So that was your first brush with traditional opera. What was the first time you saw a production that maybe awakened your sense of possibility for what this medium could be?
Yeah, I mean, the production that did awaken my sense of possibility was, in a way, I hate to say it, but it was actually a kind of negative, a negative awakening to the possibility, which was a production that I saw at the San Francisco Opera. This is when I was studying at UC Berkeley and started going to the opera on my own, which was an indication that it was starting, you know, opera was starting to really kind of grow for me and as an interest. And I started attending, and it was a production of the opera by Alban Berg called Wozzeck, which is a 20th century opera. It is a 90-minute piece, incredibly spiky, difficult, and dark, and yet harrowing and powerful and unforgettable. This was a really big turning point for me because this was the first opera where I bought a recording of it and listened to it at home. And so I had this opportunity to listen to the music at home and start to imagine what it could be. And the experience of the music, just listening to it over headphones, was so big and so overwhelming. So when I went to see it at the theater, it was kind of a disappointment, and, you know, nothing bad about San Francisco Opera. It just so happened that this was kind of an older production. It was a production that felt maybe like it didn't really get the time and attention that a piece that's like that really deserves. And so the whole thing felt a little bit, let's say, under-investigated. You know, there is this feeling when I was sitting at home that this is a piece that felt like it could completely change your entire worldview. And instead, it felt like a rather routine experience. And that's when I started to understand the potential of the stage director, actually, because I started to realize that it was the visual and the performative aspect of it that wasn't speaking to me. The music was performed beautifully, but the presentation of it, the language on stage, the acting, the stagecraft, all of those things just did not feel like they were at the same level as the music or the text. And that's when I started to think, I wonder what would happen if you started to think about these operas the way that we think about theatrical pieces and the role that a theater director plays in truly electrifying the work and making an electric connection between the stage and the audience.
Could you tell us about maybe the first time you decided to step on out on a limb in an operatic setting, you know, making a production choice that was kind of atypical, and how you figured out something that would support the story rather than detract from it? I mean, we're living in an era where opera can and is sometimes influenced by everything from like telenovelas to Cirque du Soleil. And there are many technical things that are possible in terms of staging now that weren't at all possible when works in the canon were written. Tell us about a time when you just decided to push.
I think that pushing and going out on a limb is basically my entire life. That has fueled everything that I have done, because I think one of the things that really inspired me about opera, at least my idea of what opera could be, is that it is something so much larger than life and so much. Let me put it this way. You know, opera in many ways is a truly audacious art form, because it really brings together all of these different artists from all of these walks of life to create something that no one could do on their own. So at the core of opera is collaboration. It's thinking about the many, many art forms that create something brand new out of a lot of pre-existing elements. So it's not just music. It's not just a concert. It's not just a theater piece. It's not just a fashion show. It's not just a poem. It's kind of all of these things.
At the same time.
And none of them.
Yeah.
At the same time, exactly. And I think that from the very beginning, I thought, you know, if I'm going to get involved in opera, I want to explore that, because that feels so contemporary. And that feels like, that's a way of thinking about opera that is both, I think, at the origins of what opera always was, and also, I think, the clearest path forward for its future. So to choose one moment where I've stepped out on a limb might be a little hard for me, because I think that that is something that you know, I've tried to do on each and every one of my projects in potentially larger and larger ways, you know, as I've gotten more support and and more possibilities and more experience. I've been continually trying to push the envelope, and that is certainly, you know, I'm bringing that entire attitude with me here to Detroit as well, and thinking about opera in Detroit and how I actually really think that Detroit offers such an amazing landscape for truly thinking about the next step of opera's future.
Can you give us a little comparison of the company that you've been running in Los Angeles called The Industry?
Yeah.
Is sort of mid-sized in the LA ecosystem. Can you give us a comparison of these two organizations, just so we understand sort of where we're coming from?
Yeah, sure. I mean, actually, I'm honored that you would think that our very, very small artist-driven organization deserves the designation of mid-size. I think of it as actually a quite, you know, entrepreneurial and small institution that we are actually actively trying to grow and make sure that it transcends the kind of founder syndrome that a lot of arts organizations sometimes face when it's kind of led by an artist. That's a kind of a separate story. I'll simply say that coming into the Michigan Opera Theater in Detroit is certainly a step up. I mean, Michigan Opera Theater is definitely a mid-sized organization. You know, that is, I think, a very good designation for an organization of this size. So the thing that I feel very connected to when I think about the history of Michigan Opera Theater and its founder, David DiChiara, you know, he was, you know, an entrepreneur just like me. You know, I think when I came to LA and said, I want to start my own company for experimental operas, where we're going to do operas in warehouses and train stations and moving cars and all of these kind of things, you know, everyone looked at me like I was crazy. And people still do. But little by little, more and more people have gotten the message and have jumped on the bandwagon, which has been great. And I think that David DiChiara must have been very similar when he started. Of course, he wasn't talking about doing operas in in unconventional settings, his dream was really establishing an opera company that would have a home like the Detroit Opera House, which is such a magnificent theater. But, you know, I think considering where Detroit was when he was pushing to make opera happen here, I feel a real kinship with that because I just went through that in Los Angeles, you know, and know what that takes. And I know what that, you know, there was a beautiful obituary for him by Mark Stryker in the Detroit Free Press that called him a kind of Pied Piper. And that, you know, that story could have some negative connotations, but I know that what Mark meant was a very positive one, which is how to get everyone galvanized by a vision for what opera could be for a city or a, you know, community for which opera might feel like it doesn't seem to make sense, you know, that these notions of opera as, you know, a colonialist and elitist kind of art form, that those things, we don't have to carry those associations with us anymore. We can actually try and create a kind of American identity for what opera is and one that really resonates with the city of Detroit. And I think that knowing that that was David's mission, that feels to me like exactly the kind of thing that I want to renew for this new era and for this new time.
So we're talking about two organizations on very different scale. I want to say that the number of paid employees that you had at the industry was like two or three.
Correct.
In terms of salaried folks. And and when we're talking about Michigan Opera Theater, I mean, I think this includes contractors. Their numbers are in the hundreds. So that would include musicians and singers and you know, design people and other things. I wondered, as you pondered this move to Michigan, what seemed potentially more frightening, trying to ride out the situation in Los Angeles with this, you know, this small company that you'd founded, or making a leap into, you know, coming back to the Midwest, you know, a terrain you're familiar with, but a place that's in a very different place economically than LA is right now.
I mean, I should say that I am keeping a foot in Los Angeles, and I will be continuing my work with the industry, which is my company. But we'll be changing our leadership structure to allow for me to do both. The main thing I'm personally cutting out of my schedule is all of the freelance directing that I've done, you know, in some amazing theaters all around the world. But I have to say that the main thing that drew me to Detroit and the reason why I feel like it's very easy for me to give up those opportunities of places like Berlin and Vienna and the like is because I am most interested and really most passionate about how to connect opera to a community or communities, I think is a better way to put it. You know, there's so many fascinating and rich communities that make up Detroit that all have incredible stories, incredible histories that should be reflected on the stage of the Opera House or even outside the stage of the Opera House. But part of the art that this company does should certainly reflect who makes up Detroit. And that's something actually that is a very key part of my work in Los Angeles and has been a tremendously rewarding experience in Los Angeles. That ability to work again and again with the same group of people to really get to know a city, get to know the people that make up the city, and to be creating work for those people and with those people. And to have that opportunity here in Detroit, you're right, the economics are different. But I think this notion of really connecting with the people that make up Detroit and thinking about work that really resonates with the people here is an incredible opportunity. And I think will be enormously rewarding. It's not me just coming in, doing one project and then, you know, and then leaving, but actually making a sustained effort over the course of several years to truly interact with this community. And I hope the result is a situation in which the DNA of this organization really does evolve and become something that opera can take its place alongside Motown, jazz, and techno as part of the incredible musical legacy of the city.
If you're just joining us, our guest today is Yuval Sharon. He's the new artistic director at Michigan Opera Theater. You know, many American opera companies have struggled over the past couple of decades with the expectations of the patrons they rely on for, you know, classic works in the repertoire, and the interest that a lot of directors and a lot of artists have in doing work that pushes the envelope a little bit more. Are you convinced that balance can be struck in Detroit?
Yes, I am convinced, because I got to meet a lot of the patrons here. And there is, of course, a core group of people who really love the traditional repertoire. And so do I. my favorite opera is Magic Flute. And I can't wait to do that here in Detroit. So I am certainly committed to presenting those pieces. I just think that the time is right to investigate those pieces in a brand new way so that people don't have the experience that I had when I went to see Wozzeck in San Francisco of feeling like, you know, this music was great, but I actually liked it better when I sat in my room and listened to it. You know, the experience of coming to the theater and with all of the other elements should take your experience of the music and expand on it and make it larger. So that's what I think we can really do, including opening up these pieces to truly speak to the world that we're in right now. And that can sometimes be a little controversial. I think sometimes people think it comes from a distrust of the music. And I think that's not the case at all. I think it's actually because of a true love of this music, we want to let it speak to every audience and let it really speak to our time, because these pieces really can speak to our time in ways that are really powerful. The music will always stay the same, but the visuals, you know, get renewed every time. And I think that's where the classic repertoire has still an enormous amount of potential. So in presenting myself, introducing myself to board members and to patrons here, there are certainly the people that are really excited for big change. There are people who are maybe more worried about what change might look like, but in conversations, I think understand that it's change that is more focused on evolution and from a real, real respect and love for this material. And I think once they can hear that, and once they know that the beloved pieces will come back, just, you know, in a different guise, that I think that they feel really won over. I also have to say that I've been sensing from everyone that I've been speaking to in Detroit that everyone understands that this is a very serious paradigm shift that we're experiencing right now in our world. And for opera to survive, it will also have to adapt. It will really have to look and feel and sound different after we can come back in the theater. Otherwise, it will risk feeling kind of irrelevant and outdated. And I don't believe that's the case with opera, but I think we have to make a very strong case now for it, because otherwise I don't see how it's going to make it.
Another thing that's happening in the opera ecosystem right now is the fact that every local company is, at least to some extent, in competition with a company like the Metropolitan Opera, which offers a Netflix-like subscription of its simulcasts. You can log on and you can watch really top-drawer productions anytime, day or night now. How does that affect your approach to what you have to offer in a live performance?
Yeah, it's such a great point. You know, I think there is, on one hand, an enormous gauntlet that's been thrown down to every single company in America once the Met started broadcasting in HD. And like you said, offering it a la carte, you know, in the comfort of your own home, and previously in the comfort of your own theater, a movie theater, I should say. So this has really, I think it opens up so much potential for each local company. I think the reason that local companies have struggled as soon as these HD broadcasts have started to become so widely disseminated is because a lot of the companies are basically trying to do the same thing as the Met. The productions kind of look the same. You know, they don't necessarily have a really for the most part, I'm speaking very generally, but there isn't always a really strong point of view on exactly the same kind of repertoire that they can see in their in a much more comfortable and much more affordable scenario. And with these top-notch singers, they're digitally compressed and you're not hearing the sound in three dimensions, but there's got to be a more compelling reason to come into the theater. And for me, the answer to this, and this is what I am very excited to explore here in Detroit, is that the opera here must look and feel and sound like no other city in the country. It has to be something that is so clearly a Detroit opera. Then I think it completely complements in the most wonderful way the kind of work that gets disseminated, not just from the Met Opera, but now, the Vienna Staatsoper, and all of these other institutions now are so easily accessible to us. And in fact, they're so easily accessible that we kind of forget how magical opera can be. And so I think when I think about live performance, as we're struggling to figure out how to make live performance happen again in these strange conditions, for me, the liveness of it is paramount and is so important. I'll definitely be looking for ways to make sure audiences can experience it safely while they might be worried without a vaccine. So they still have access to it, but I can't imagine supplanting the electricity and the excitement of a live performance just through these digital platforms.
Yuval Sharon's first production with Michigan Opera Theater is a drive-in adaptation of Wagner's Twilight of the Gods called Twilight Gods, October 17th through 20th. Yuval, I know we've got to let you go, but in a word or two, what should we expect?
I think expect the unexpected, I guess. I love introducing myself to the Detroit audience with a piece like this, because I hope people will have this feeling. To go back to your question about what it was like to watch an opera when I was 13 and watching La Traviata, I think to myself, well, the 13-year-old me, if I was experiencing opera moving through this parking center and seeing these singers and instrumentalists on all of these different levels to create this kind of immersive experience, if that was my first experience of opera, I would have fallen in love with opera so much faster than I already have. So I really hope that there is this feeling of a piece that feels really deeply connected to the time that we're in, that really looks to connect the classic repertoire in a brand new experience as an opportunity to think about what the future of the art form can look like, not just here in Detroit, but maybe across the country.
Yuval Sharon is the incoming artistic director at Michigan Opera Theater. Hey, Yuval, welcome to Michigan. We can't wait to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to come back.